AARP Indiana, an information resource for Hoosiers about the CARE Act, providing support for caregivers when their loved one enters and leaves the hospital. More at action.aarp.org/incarecard.
A state Senate committee votes for LGB protections, but no T. What happens next? A tax cut tossed in with a pair of tax hikes, a vote for more guns in the state house, and a plan for better treatment of mentally ill prison inmates. That plus civility awards for lawmakers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 29, 2016. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the conflict between religious freedom and civil rights led to a five-hour hearing at the State House. The Senate Rules Committee approved a bill to extend civil rights protections to gay, lesbian, and bisexual people, but not transgender men and women. Here's the testimony of a transgender woman named Rhiannon Carlson, followed by a florist from Washington State, Baronelle Stutzman, who says she was threatened after declining service to a same-sex couple.
I'm happy to be alive today as a proud transgender woman, but mere survival is still a part of my story. I still wait for the day that I can be more focused on life, liberty, and happiness.
If you vote for these bills, you'll be sending a message to the citizens of Indiana that share my beliefs about marriage, that they will not be tolerated. They will be threatened, dragged into court, sued, and lose their business.
Will the Senate support new civil rights protections? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, no Democrats voted for this bill. Why not?
Well, I mean, it's a terrible bill. It's not only doesn't include transgender. If I understand it correctly, you don't even have to be in an organized religion. You can just say that this is your religious principle, and you can refuse the service. It isn't about religious freedom. It's about it's about balancing civil rights and ending discrimination. You know, Mike Pence brought us to this point. It was his idea for RFRA, and he embarrassed the entire state of Indiana in the process of doing it. The only way to do this, which won't result in a negative story someplace, is to do it completely. And that's include transgender and just put four words and a comma in the civil rights bill.
Yeah, House Speaker Brian Bosma says he doesn't know anybody who likes the version it's in now. This has got a long ways to go before it's going to become law.
Well, the important thing is it's still going. David Long has provided tremendous leadership on this because he's kept this issue alive, as he promised he would. He's passed it out of the Rules Committee. It will go to the floor. Second readings will be available Tuesday and has to be heard, I think, Wednesday, right?
And
passed
so.
Through the first house, so if it's going to pass. So, and he has said that he wants to keep this bill as clean as it is because they have struck a balance inside that caucus that this is what might be acceptable at this point in the process. So. And as we all know, politics is the art of the possible, and that's certainly true of legislation. And in this case, David Long has moved along, and he ought to be credited for that. And it does have religious protections and breaks new ground on civil rights that they've never been willing to go before. So I'm glad he's kept alive. I'm glad the debate's going on, and I think it'll pass the Senate.
But what you're saying and what David Long is saying is that the Senate will not support transgender protections, and what the LGBT community is saying is that they won't leave them out. So do they try to kill it at some point?
Oh, I think that's a given. I think that you have strong feelings, and David Long even made reference to this week. There are strong feelings on both sides of this issue at the extremes. And I don't think either side is necessarily in a mood for compromise.
Religious freedom folks don't want any protection.
Right.
So right now everybody's unhappy.
That's exactly right. And there has been an attempt to compromise, but some of the compromises seem a bit forced in that they may cause more trouble than they're intended. One I'll give you up that has nothing to do with whether you're not, at the core issue. But the notion of home rule and municipal ordinances. Initially, this would supersede everything. But now, as it's written, as I understand it, you would have all ordinances that are in place as of December 31st could remain in place, but no new ones, which seems to me if you have a change in leadership or the council at a given municipality and it says effectively it's disenfranchised or it is unable to act in a manner that the neighboring community has, that seems like it's ripe for a legal challenge.
It's loaded with problems. It repeals RFRA and the fix from last year.
Right.
Is that a good move?
Well, I think in the scope of the bill, it makes some sense because they're trying to replace it with this other language. But I do think that it's got real problems when it hits the House. I think it's important
If it hits the House.
Right, if it hits the House. But I think Mike is right. I think to get it to this point is a remarkable feat. If it goes beyond this point, we'll wait to see. But I think it's worth remembering that the people who are for religious freedom and the people who are for LGBTQ situation, if this bill dies and nothing happens, then we revert to what we've been under the last year. And I think a lot of people in the General Assembly would be just fine with that. Everybody else would be pretty upset.
I think the governor would be just fine.
But I think
that.
Everybody else would be pretty fine if it reverts back to Senate Bill 50, the fix last year.
But the problem is, again, we've put this issue out there in Indiana.
Oh, I agree.
And everybody's going to follow what we're doing here.
I agree.
And even if other states don't have this protection, we're the state that opened the Pandora's box, and we have to fix it and fix it correctly. And if they don't have enough gumption in the legislature to undo the damage they've done, they ought to resign their seats. That's what they ought to do.
We've talked a lot about this issue over the last couple of years about evolving and people's attitudes changing. I know people in this group whose attitudes have changed. But different people come to conclusions at different times. And I got to believe that one of the reasons that we're where we are in the Senate right now is because legislators are not feeling the same kind of change in some of their home districts. Because legislators, for the most part, you may believe this or not believe this, but they usually reflect the people that they represent because they spend most of their time doing just that. And so there are parts of the state where people are not up to speed on this, on trying to make these kind of changes. And I think that's coming through right now, and that's why David Long's trying to strike a balance here.
But when you have it where you're individual, it's how do you determine what somebody's individual religious beliefs are? I mean, we're going to be litigating this to the council.
It's like it's advancing, and it's still alive.
I agree that it's getting a debate. That's a good thing. But at the end of that, to resolve the issue of Indiana's image, it has to be fixed.
On that point, David Long promised that there would be a discussion.
Right.
He's fulfilled his promise.
And he's continuing to fulfill. And that's under a very tough circumstance for him to be doing this inside his own caucus.
And you're exactly right about the evolution on this issue, Mike, about how rapid the change has been. And that's why I think it's a guarantee that no matter what happens, even if the John suggests nothing happens this session and it reverts to what had been in place,
the issue doesn't go away
because what we talked about before, the people on both sides, this will be back and forth as a
right
ping-pong ball.
Right through the election.
Well, never mind the election.
You know what?
How about the next decade?
Well,
I think that this will be an
interesting point. And at that point, defeated the next election.
As far as the election is concerned, I think at that point you will clearly see where people of Indiana really are on this issue, because we'll find out in a hurry whether or not this issue is the kind that can determine an election for a member of the legislature. And that's going to be interesting to see.
All right, moving on. A bill that includes tax hikes on gas and cigarettes now includes a tax cut. The House Ways and Means Committee added a provision to the road funding bill that would reduce the state income tax over a 10-year period. It's an obvious attempt to sweeten the bill and attract votes from tax hike opponents. House Speaker Brian Bosman.
Is that my first choice? Absolutely not. Am I hoping to make the package a little more attractive to our Senate colleagues and meet one of the governor's long-term goals? Yeah, absolutely.
Is that prudent? And a lot of that depends on the economic circumstances of the state at the time we consider passing it. But I think those are two separate issues.
Okay, good. And that Senate
leader David Long, Mike McDaniel, what makes sense about cutting taxes at the same time that you raise them?
Well, I think politically it made a lot of sense on the political end of it. Trying to, as I said before, last week we talked about some of this legislation. Representative Soliday put a lot of thought into this bill. There's a lot of good work that's been going into this, looking for a long-term solution. But as we said before, the politics of a non-budget election year trying to get this done is pretty difficult at best. And so going to the Senate, I don't think this has any chance of happening over there. But I do think you're going to see legislation passed this year that will dedicate money to roads, local and state, but it's not going to be a long-term fix. You're not going to see that until the budget year, period.
The House Speaker says that this bill, with the tax hikes and the tax cut, would be revenue neutral after 8 years.
It's ridiculous because you know what will happen with this. They stretch it over an eight-year period so that next year or the year after, when nobody's paying attention, it'll get repealed. Just like, remember when we had the too much in the surplus, it was going to go back? Guess what? That got repealed. And this will, too. But the idea is they've got to face up to their responsibility. The responsibility is to come up with a sensible way for long-term funding of roads. And the cigarette tax and moving the money around the general fund and arguably taking money from higher education and education to do that is not the way. You're going to have to increase the revenue.
When you're saying that's what would happen if they cut the income tax, what the Republicans are saying is that it would reduce the surplus.
Well, it would reduce the surplus for uses in other places, and if the surplus falls below a certain level, then you do have real problems when it comes to the cash flow for the budget overall, and you do see the potential
for
reductions. The Democrat plan is not a long-term solution.
No, that's not the argument here, Mike. The argument is whether or not it makes sense to reduce the income tax at the same time you're increasing the gas tax. It's a politically understandable move. It's bad public policy.
Right.
Well, and it's aimed eventually at getting the governor to sign it. Will he sign a bill with tax hikes in it?
I think he would be reluctant for the very reason you mentioned, this being, you know, November's not that terribly far away when voters go to the polls. It's a tough issue. I mean, ultimately, I think there's got to be recognition, and we can call it whatever you want, tax increase, user fee
walks
hike.
Walks like a duck, talks like a duck.
Whatever it is, revenue, expenses go up, costs go up. They go up in the rest of the world. Government doesn't operate in a vacuum. And if people want the services and the roads and the bridges that they expect and demand, somebody's got to pay for it. Now, whether that's being passed off to the locals to do a local option income tax increase or an additional surcharge of a wheel tax or additional, it doesn't matter, I guess, in the end. Somebody's got to produce the revenue.
Yeah, we need an ongoing source that's related to the roads, and that's
it
obviously an increase in gas
tax. It probably does make sense to have the money going to the related source so people can
see
where the money's going.
This is messy at the moment. All right. A bill that would allow 200 staff members to carry guns inside the State House is now on its way to the Indiana House floor. The bill passed the state Senate 36-13 this week. Lawmakers and judges can already carry guns, and many do. State Senator Brent Steele says others should have the same opportunity.
That if you choose not to carry, that's your prerogative. Go for it. I choose not to be a victim. I would choose that my legislative assistant has the right not to be a victim.
John Ketzenberger, why not let everybody carry a gun in the state?
Well, using the same logic that Senator Steele used, the question is, why not? Because if by default he or his legislative assistant will not be a victim if they carry guns, then everyone else will be. So why not let everyone else carry guns? I mean, I don't understand the line of demarcation, and it doesn't make sense, really.
This is the NRA...
running amok.
I wasn't going to say that, but
I'll say it for you.
Their answer is not fewer guns; it's more guns.
I think that's right overall. I mean, this seems to be the one area where there is movement or success for the NRA and pro-gun faction this year. There are other bills that would have extended protections on college campuses for, I'm talking about Second Amendment protections. on college campuses for people who have drinking convictions or alcohol convictions in
their
background.
There's another one that would allow prison guards to bring a gun to work.
Another one would have actually done away with all handgun licensing requirements.
Maybe the prisoners could be
victims. Now, those aren't going anywhere.
Maybe the prisoners should
have. Those aren't going anywhere.
Them.
This is the only one that's going anywhere. And as for, if you listen to, let me just say this, if you look at the, listen to the testimony or the comments that were made at the rostrum, it paints a pretty bleak picture of the state in Indianapolis. Yeah. Basically, if you go outside the door, you better be in a bubble,
well, that's,
a Teflon bubble.
That's the argument that was made, was that they don't necessarily need guns inside the state house, but they might need them when they're walking to or from their car.
It's never been a worry for me.
Do you worry, Mike?
No, I really don't. But look, there are about 200 staff people in the legislature, and this may affect four or five people, and I don't see this as a big deal in the big scope of things. But, you know, it is what it is. And we always said that the bulletproof glass in the House was not to protect the legislature, to protect us in the hallway when the legislators all start shooting at each other.
Well, you never know.
And, you know, I think reporters, I mean, you're going to be targeted.
I draw the line at reporters having guns.
You know, the only bad thing about this.
Senator Toms, who's the author of the bill, said he was going to try to get reporters in next year.
Oh, great. I cannot believe we're wasting time on this. I mean, we've got adults dying with adult protective services is underfunded. We don't debate any of that stuff. We debate this nonsense. It's the NRA and the radical right of the Republican Party control the agenda.
Whatever happened to the pen being more powerful than the sword? Carry your pen with impunity, right?
Yeah, well, that'll do well when they shoot at you.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should State House staffers be permitted to carry guns? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only if the public can too. Last week's question, do you support a hike in the cigarette tax? 81% said yes, 12% said no, 7% said a dollar is too much. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Big changes are on the way for the mentally ill inmates who make up as much as 20% of the Indiana prison population. The ACLU of Indiana and Indiana Protection and Advocacy Services announced a settlement with the Indiana Department of Correction this week. The two groups sued over the way the state treats mentally ill prisoners. A settlement requires state correctional facilities to have individualized treatment plans for inmates created by mental health professionals who are familiar with each prisoner. Ken Falk of the ACLU says isolation can no longer be used as a punishment in most cases.
And one of the things the settlement does is it says that before a prisoner who is mentally ill can be disciplined, the treatment staff have to be consulted and say, hey, is the reason that so-and-so did this because they're mentally ill?
John Schwanis, how will this affect the state's prisons?
I think it'll improve the situation, and Ken Falk and others with the ACLU pointed out that the state has already been quick to incorporate some of these changes even before the formalization of this.
Before the settlement, but the lawsuit's 7 years old.
Right, right. Well, there's plenty of time for changes to be made. But this is a sign, I think, of a positive thing. You look at the fact that the largest provider of mental health services in the state of Indiana is the Department of Correction. You have roughly 1 in 5 inmates have been diagnosed as having a mental illness. And guess what? Most of those individuals will be getting back out into society. So do you want people who have had an opportunity to get care for their illnesses? And you couple this with what was being done at Community Hospital with the new facility that the Pence administration has done, very positive. And this is also in keeping this week with Barack Obama's announcement that he would effectively do away with large aspects of solitary confinement at the federal
juveniles,
level.
For juveniles.
Or for mental health. And mental health.
Right. Okay. Health. So it's also a sign of how poorly we're dealing with mental illness on the outside.
Well, I think there has to be even more understanding than we already have about mental illness. For the longest time, it was often dismissed, misunderstood, and we are coming around on that finally. I'm very encouraged for all the reasons that John mentioned about the approach that the state is taking, and I think that will help the rest of the public understand. Look, mental health issues are very real, and they need to be dealt with the same way other medical conditions are dealt with. And the sooner we do that, then the fewer problems we'll have in society.
It's also, this is a statement on what was being done previously.
Right, right. And it's good. It's good that the attitudes toward mental health have evolved as they have in recent years. And you're right, this is a very good, positive step forward, and I think the ACLU deserves a lot of credit for bringing this to everyone's attention and forcing a change, and I think it's for the better.
Did it need, it took the ACLU to make it happen.
I don't think this is a good agreement. I think this is a great agreement. And the reason is for the very reason you just cited. Not only does it deal with the situation inside the correction facilities, but also highlights the general need. And the prisons were never designed to be mental health hospitals. That's not what they're supposed to be. And that's what they've become because of the lack of facilities on the outside.
Yep.
And so, you know, this will only help the entire situation by shining a bright light on it. And as I said, changes are already being made, and we're all better off for that.
Democrat Glenda Ritz is running for re-election as state school superintendent, and a Republican announced plans to challenge her this week. Jennifer McCormick is the superintendent of schools in Yorktown and a first-time candidate. She told reporters at the State House that she hopes to take the politics out of education.
I've experienced in the classroom as a special ed teacher. I've led buildings and I've led districts. I know what it takes to be a leader in education. I have done it and I will continue to do that. That sets me apart from our current superintendent.
Momentum behind this. Mike McDaniel, McCormick was a Democrat until just recently. What will that mean to GOP convention delegates?
It means that she's evolved into a higher being.
I'm glad.
I know that's kind of a theme here. I think it's great. I think she's clearly, she's been a teacher, special ed teacher, junior high teacher, assistant superintendent, superintendent. She's done all the things that you need to do to have the resume to move forward and show the kind of leadership that we need in the state. I think she's going to be a good candidate. Now, we also have another
lady from
Fort Wayne named Wooten, who is also an instructor up there, a college instructor. And so we're going to have a contest for superintendent. And I think that's good. I think it's healthy moving forward.
Glenda Ritz is viewed as vulnerable by the Republicans, obviously.
Well, I mean, she's the only statewide Democrat, but that doesn't, except for, obviously, on state elections. But I think she's going to be very strong. You know, Mike Pence and his echo chamber at the State Board of Education have done everything they can do to mess up education in this state. I mean, the I-STEP is the perfect example. Glenda Ritz has been talking for 2 years about how bad that test was, and only recently did they start listening to her. Having all of them in the same echo chamber is bad for education. She's doing a very positive job of protecting the teachers and pointing out the fallacy of their arguments. I think she's going to be reelected.
This will be a referendum on Glenda Ritz.
I think it will. And
Mike Pence.
It's going to be a referendum on education issues and who in Indiana believes has the right way forward. Glenda Ritz burst on the scene because she ran a great campaign. We'll see if she can now, as a known candidate with a record of her own, run a campaign that is able to do what Ann says and become victorious. And that's not it's a much different thing, and it's not an easy task. So
right.
We'll
I think
see
she's highly vulnerable and one that's at risk. Well,
yeah.
she's got
so
a problem.
Is Mike
and
Pence.
Nobody knows who she is, for starters, and a poll came out this week. And that's a problem
for
her.
Glenda Ritz's name ID is surprisingly low statewide.
Right.
Mike Pence isn't, and people have formed an opinion when we talk about vulnerability.
I thought
John,
this was about Glenda.
Is it possible to take the politics out of education, as Jennifer McCormick said?
Like Mike Pence has?
Sadly, no, because when you're talking about a subject area that constitutes more than half of the state's budget, and there is nothing more fundamental than the philosophy about how to educate the next generation of Hoosiers. So I'm not saying that in any cynical way. It's just, in part, politics I don't think is inherently bad. It's just you can't separate the two.
Finally, a newly formed group of retired lawmakers is trying to encourage more civility in the General Assembly. It created an award that is believed to be the first of its kind in the country. It was given to three senators, Luke Kenley of Noblesville, Vanita Becker of Evansville, and Earlene Rogers of Gary. State Representatives Tim Brown of Crawfordsville and Charlie Brown of Gary were also recognized for, among other things, setting good examples. Here's former lawmaker Ralph Foley.
So as to reflect positively on and to generate respect for the General Assembly.
With the acrimony and the fighting and the circular firing squads we see taking place in politics, that young kids who have a desire to figure out where they're going in life will discount government service and I think that would be a travesty.
And that's former lawmaker Dale Grubb. Ann Delaney, will that lead to more civility?
I hope so, because we need it. I mean, there's no question about that we need it. And I give them credit for thinking up this idea and, of course, putting distinguished personnel like yourself on the committee, Jim. But I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. I really do.
Is there a problem with civility?
Sure. I think there is. I think it's become so partisan that it's counterproductive in a lot of ways. And we're going to lose good people to retirement this time around, like Earlene Rogers, who just won that award. And we're going to miss having that kind of civility in the process. And so the attitudes and the atmosphere that we have now has got to change for the better. And it's hard to do when you're losing people like her.
A little positive reinforcement.
Oh, absolutely. And this isn't just an Indiana problem. I mean, it's nothing.
Two lawmakers in Missouri have gotten a fist fight this week.
Well, look at even at the federal level. The stories about how Tip O'Neill, you know, leading Democrat in the House, and President Reagan used to argue, you know, vigorously during the day, but then get together, retire to the confines of.
Gotta go. It's not like that anymore. That's Indiana
retiring.
Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.